Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Kind of big week this week. Kind of big. Kind of lots.
If you're counting in money.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's certainly a big money week. But every week, every day, every minute is a big money time for
big
Apple.
Big money time.
But we also got macOS Ventura, iPadOS 16.1. Mm-hmm. What else?
If you want to go...
I did my embargo review of iPads. Yeah. We did... this is, you know, I took a bunch of This Is Tim's out of my transcript, but boy, he was on. I was laughing so hard. There were so many This Is Tim's in the analyst call, and it just every time it tickles me because, like,
who else would it be?
It would be Luca, who we can identify because he's an Italian and he has an Italian accent.
Yes.
So we know, and then Tim has Tim's accent and is the voice of Tim Cook, who's the CEO of Apple. And he's like, yeah, Shannon, this is Tim. Welcome back. I'm like, yeah, we know who you are, but he keeps on doing it. It kills me. I love it.
Yeah, well, I also noted to you when we talked in our, we should plug our live video session yesterday.
Yeah.
Where we talked about results.
Talked about the results.
And I mentioned at that point, which I think now that you've listened to the analyst call, maybe you would concur that Tim was even more tight-lipped than usual, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. They're very disciplined. My Macworld column just went up, where I try to kind of like, you know, what can I take away? And there was actually a big picture takeaway that I withheld from my friend Roman at Macworld, and thought that's a piece that I'm going to write some other time, which a bigger picture. But I was able to, you know, crank some stuff out, you know, based on things that they said. But I actually thought a lot more of the insight was in the prepared statements than in the Q&A, which is sort of like, that's not why you do a Q&A. But they had a few little details. You know, he's obviously got his little cheat sheet with, like, we were the top six phones in Australia and top two phones in urban China, and like going off about that. But mostly when people ask them for detail, they just referred back to the statements that they made.
Right.
It's
which is
exciting.
You know, I mean, it's very much an Apple thing, right? Like, they, in the same way we talk about their events and how they prefer doing videos for the events, like, because it's all very carefully scripted and they can control everything. Same thing here, right? They want to do their boilerplate. They want to talk about the things they want to talk about. I think they like minimizing the questions as much as they can.
Yes.
Because they don't want to have to go off script. And of course, we love it when they go off script, because that is the case where we learn stuff that they don't want us to, not that they don't want us to know, but certainly a lot of times they don't want to emphasize.
Yeah.
Right? Because if they have to dig for it,
I don't know if it's even going off script. I always have felt like they have there's a universe of things they are willing to disclose to Wall Street.
Sure.
But they're not going to do some of that. They're not going to do unless you ask.
Right.
And then
ferreting that out.
Right, right. Because I've got like 10 things I could say on the call. This is Tim, by the way. 10 things I could say on the call. And if they ask me about one of those 10 things, I'll disclose that. And if they don't ask, they don't get to know. And that makes me feel like I'm dispensing information, but that you got to ask the right question. I also sometimes wonder, because it's the same people on the call most of the time, I also wonder sometimes if there's been some collaboration behind the scenes. Not to accuse anybody of anything, but I do sometimes wonder if somebody from investor relations goes to Krish Sankar and says, or Shannon Cross, or whoever, these regular voices we hear, Jim Suva, and says, ask Tim about the, you know, whatever, right? Like, I do wonder about that sometimes, if some of those are even setups.
Sure. Yeah, I believe it. I mean, there is a lot that feels like, yeah, maybe they want to surface stuff, but they want to do it in a little bit more of a subtle way.
Yeah.
So they definitely...
The point is, you're not going to trick these guys into revealing things that they don't want to reveal. That's not how it works.
Yes, exactly.
So we just sit there and try to look for the little details. Like, there was a moment, this is going to make you happiest of all people. There was a moment where Tim Cook basically said, now that we're done for the year.
Sigh. Heavy sigh.
And yeah, that is that moment where it became very clear. They were talking about retail, and they said, you know, basically, now that we have our lineup set, as we approach the holiday season with our product lineup set, I'd like to share my gratitude to retail. Well, friends, I think that means no new Apple products the rest of the year. I think
I'm
that's what
surprised
that
a little bit, but I mean, you know, maybe unless they're considering like, well, nobody cares about a Mac Mini, you know, like that. If we maybe could we could announce one of those and it wouldn't really change our product line, right?
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. That's me being wishful thinking.
That's right.
But it is.
Don't give up.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they got to do it at some point, right?
They do.
It's, you know, here's the thing to me about this is like we've heard a lot of rumors, right? And, you know, it's always interesting, as you and Mike often talk about when dissecting Sheriff Mark Gurman's rumors, that he has insight into certain parts of the business, but clearly not everything, right? So there's stuff that he doesn't know. And so he often soft-pedals stuff where he's like, well, this could happen, you know? And so there was stuff more recently talking about, okay, it seems like maybe there's not an imminent Mac announcement for these products because he didn't really have insight into that and suspect that maybe if he did, right? Like his sources seem to be such that like if this were happening, he would probably know about
it. He used to say the Macs were coming out at the, you know, this fall, and his latest report was that it's sometime this fall or early next year.
Right.
And I, again, that's weird, right? Because it suggests a level of a lack of confidence about that fall report that he made earlier, but not enough confidence to say it'll happen early next year, for sure. So he ends up in this kind of hazy kind of mode of like, well, you know, and that's interesting. I think that's interesting. But yeah, I do think you can, for them to drop a speed bump release of some M2 stuff in a couple of weeks. Does that really change the, you know, as we head into the holidays with our lineup set? I mean, you could argue, if you're Tim Cook, you could say, this is Tim. Well, what I meant is that we're heading into the holidays with our lineup set, and now, you know, in a couple of weeks, we're going to drop the last piece, and then our lineup will be set heading into the holidays. It's not even Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. We're not heading there yet. It's fine. That's very wordy for Tim. He wouldn't say it that way. But, yeah, so you could make that argument. But it also sort of sounds like it's not going to happen, and they're just going to, which may, again, we were speculating on this in the member Discord, which if you're not in there, you should join that. It's fun. We were speculating about the idea that, you know, the rumored announcements here are another step in the M2 process, right? It's the M2 Max and Pro at the very least, leaving aside the Mac Pro as a thing that they said that would be 2 years, and it's been 2 years, and the Mac Pro and that one high-end Mac Mini are still out there, and I would argue the large iMac is also still out there, which they're not talking about, but I think is going to come back in some form probably. So so the transition isn't there, but like I feel like the step to a new chip, even if it's in the same family, it's a big step, and the MacBook Pro is a major product for them. So I could see that there's something in the production line or something in the chips coming out of TSMC. They did say that they're, you know, that it sounds like the legacy nodes are doing great now, that they don't have any problem getting chips anymore, which is good. Although the way that they implied it was that some of them are much more expensive than they used to be, but that you can get them now. My point is that is a big step. It seems like just a speed bump, but it's not just a speed bump. It's bringing out those new chips, which means they need to start making M2 Pro and Max chips, which they're not. You know, if they are, they're doing it because they're ramping for that process. But like, it's not. Like, if all they were doing was an M2 Mac Mini, I'm sure it would already be out. But that's not what the rumor is. The rumor is it's a Mac Mini with M2 or M2 Pro option. That's the new chip. It's the same chip they're putting in the MacBook Pro. If it's not ready, maybe. I mean, honestly, Apple is a very disciplined company, right? I mean, maybe they look at this and they're like, nah, I mean, we're not ready. And why would we push it? We could just wait until January.
Well, and that's the thing you always got to keep in mind with this Apple. Like, you know, Apple is making decisions based on practicality, right? They're not, I think, you know, briefly touched on this a week or two ago. Like, they're not making things to fit in your nice boxes, right? They're not making things to necessarily line up exactly the way that you think they're going to. They're going to ship stuff when it's ready. There's no point in holding something that's ready because that's lost revenue.
Right.
Similarly, there's no point in rushing something out the door that's not ready because that's just a losing proposition, right? And especially if it's like we can't ship in volume, especially for a product like this where I feel like I don't know, it'd be really, I don't think it's a high demand product, but if you can't even meet that volume, then that just is frustrating to the people. Like, why right. didn't you wait, right? You know, I mean, it's the thing you talk about a lot of times with game consoles is like, you know, racing to try and figure out how do you order one? And it's like, well, just, you know, fulfill the orders as you get them, right?
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, seems like it shouldn't be brain surgery, but there you go.
And it could be that the, you know, Apple feels like all of the other stuff it's got in its product line right now is great for the holidays, and that's what they want to focus on, is producing as many MacBook Airs as they can and as many iPhones as they can.
A lot of Mac Minis under the tree, but...
And yeah, right? They're running the lighting, right? That's what you meant
that's
by
right.
under the tree, is they're running the lighting. And so for them to say that, it's not quite the same, but it's a similar kind of feeling that I get, like, especially since they make so much money, and we all are, like, sweating the details of when are you going to bring out that new product, but, like... Apple is going so well, and they can afford to be patient. And it's the M2 iPad Pro is the same kind of story, where my gut feeling is at some point in the last year-ish, somebody looked at the pace of their next-gen iPad Pro and said, it's not going to happen. Either we can't make it happen in time, or we're doing something even bigger, which are the rumors are literally bigger. And so what we're going to do is we're just going to stick the M2 in the existing M1 enclosure and call it a day. And they can afford to do that. And it frustrates you if you're an iPad Pro fan and you want the next big thing. But Apple's got a lot of traffic going on. It's got a lot of stuff,
sure.
a lot of products
yeah.
to control. And I feel like it's doing so well at this point in so many areas. And it's been burned by the lack of availability in a bunch of places
right.
that... It's exercising its ability to say, we'll take a pass on that one, do it later, when it can.
Well, it's the thing that we saw yesterday, right, too, was this, you know, in the talking about the Mac quarter and saying,
yes.
like, yeah, we had a great Mac quarter, but it's because we were fulfilling all these back orders and last quarter wasn't so great because we could not meet demand.
One of the great insights of the whole call, actually, was that moment where they said three reasons why we sold a lot of Macs this year. One, a lot of people want Macs. That's great. Two, had a lot of back orders, couldn't fulfill them because our factories were shut down, did that. And three, filled the channel full of Macs so that we can sell those too. I was like, okay,
yeah,
well,
exactly.
there you go. That's it. And so, so you kind of have to average those out a little bit, and you know, it was probably right, but that's good.
But they don't like to be in that position.
No.
If they can help it. They rather have sort of their consistent,
just
like,
in time.
We sold everything we're making. Yep.
Yep. Every item. It's not quite that every item that comes off the assembly line has a name attached to it, because they do ship like boxes into the channel, right?
Yeah.
But even there, they know the channel appetite is X. And so every one of those that doesn't have a name attached to it has a number in a channel partner who is going to sell it when it gets there attached to it. And that's their dream, right? Is like, literally, there is no excess. We're making them exactly as fast as you're buying them. And they went totally out of whack with that this year. And I think if you asked Tim Cook or Luca Maestri or Jeff Williams, what was the, you know, Mac in 2022, what was the big overall vibe? They would first say, well, we sold a lot of them. It was the most ever. Hooray. And then two would be, wow, we were way out of balance because of those shutdowns. And that was really hard. And it took us a whole quarter and a quarter and a half to get back to where we wanted to be. Or if it was
exactly.
Tim Cook, maybe to where we once belonged. You could make a Beatles reference, maybe. I don't know. So interesting, always interesting to get that stuff out there. The new iPad, I mean, I talked about it a lot on Upgrade, and I wrote a piece. I kind of wrote two pieces about the iPads, because I wrote my, like, big picture take when the announcements happened, and so that allowed me to kind of focus a little bit more on the product that I had in my hands for a week, you know, on Monday on Six Colors and then on Upgrade. But I just want to reiterate, I think that 10th generation iPad is really great. Like, it has so many features that we might have thought only a few years ago were kind of like iPad Pro features and iPad Pro styling, and it's got the bright colors. And really, unless you want something you can pay more for something that's a little nicer screen, you know, the good Apple Pencil. If you use the Apple Pencil, don't buy it. But like, most people don't. And the keyboard, I have some issues with it. It's heavy. It's expensive. It's a kickstand. But if you're just like a person who wants an iPad to look at stuff on the internet and like is not going to be using a keyboard or a pencil or anything like that, which I think is the archetypal iPad user. It's great. I mean, like, what? It's great. I have nothing negative to say about it in that very specific niche. It's the accessory story where it starts to get kind of messy. And yeah, they make nicer ones if you want something nicer. But I think it's my only other real thing, and that this is a meta thing, is it's too bad that it costs what it does, and that means that they had to keep the ninth generation in. I understand why that is, right. But it's still too bad because it means, as they went into in great detail on. I think it was ATP. It might have been connected. But either way, they made the point, which I tried to make too, which is the problem with the Apple Pencil, one, being out there with a ridiculous dongle and everything now, is not just that it's going to be there now. It's that this product's going to be in the product line for years because they're going to eventually get rid of the ninth generation and push the 10th generation down. And so you're going to end up 10 years after the Apple Pencil 1 came out, and maybe even 10 years after the, depending on the length of the product life, the Apple Pencil 2 came out. You may still have Apple selling Apple Pencil 1 specifically for the 10th generation iPad. And that's the part that really gets me, is that this is... It seems ridiculous today, but this is a product that's going to linger, and that dumb confluence of design decisions is going to be with us. And so, like, bottom line, if you care about the Apple Pencil, just don't do it. Just don't buy this product, period.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the thing that's really interesting, as you said. You know, they have to stick with this for years, which also means making either A, they made so many Apple Pencil ones, they're like, well, we're going to have to sell them eventually, or they're committing to continuing to make them, which is also a kind of a head scratcher. But that's
unless
engineering musts.
I think it was the Connected Voice who said it's possible that at some point here in the near future, Apple will just. Will finally ultimately slipstream in an Apple Pencil 1 with a USB-C port on it. I think that's not impossible. It seems ridiculous, but I think it's not impossible. Or a redesigned Apple Pencil that's like almost like a 2.5 that is like the Apple Pencil 2 but has a way to... Or a charger for the Apple Pencil 2. Like, this is a problem that could be solved along the road with... an accessory change, right? They could do it. It feels like they decided not to bother, but to Federico's point, Federico Vitici from Mac Stories, he made the point that I thought was good, which is, why would you invest so much money in a what seems to be one-off Magic Keyboard Folio? It only works with this one product, and we really think it's ever going to work with another product? Why would you do that and yet not invest in a change to the pencil for this product? Doesn't really make a lot of sense, other than that they got a lot of pencils in storage they got to move.
Yeah, I mean, it feels a little bit, you know, still like a, you know, rubber hits the road or like down to the metal, like situation of like, we can't make this work right now. Like, we can't fit that in and do the camera move and all that. We just got to ship
too much
it.
Effort.
And we looked at the numbers and said, look, most of the people who are, you know, I did see people talking about education markets, right? Mm-hmm. And being like, well, the people who are using the ninth and generation iPad and, you know, A, people still buying that potentially, and B, you know, people who've invested a lot in that.
Yeah,
and
schools especially,
right?
Have bought a lot of Apple Pencil 1s. And I totally get that. But you could have made this compatible with Apple Pencil 1 with a dongle and made a new Apple Pencil 1 with some other connection type, whether it was a jack instead of a port. Or a port instead of a jack, or USB-C instead of Lightning. There are some choices you could have made to make, like, all new pencils will be better, but if you've got an old pencil, we have a compatibility story. And they just decided everybody gets the compatibility story. It's weird. It's just weird. I get why it happened, sort of, but, like, it's weird. But here we are talking about it. I just want to say again, I think for most people, it's just great. It's you know, Apple's low-end iPad is pretty nice. It's just... you know, pricier than I'd like it to be. And all the accessories are pricier than I'd like them to be for a product like this. The fact that the keyboard costs more than half as much as the iPad, or more than half of what the iPad costs. Like, very rapidly it becomes an $800 low end iPad with keyboard. It's not great, but that's where we are.
Yeah. Yep. No.
Do you,
we spent a lot of ink on it.
Yeah. So are you on macOS Ventura?
Yeah, and I have been for a while. I've been running the betas
good.
For some time.
Yeah.
And because, as I described, my iMac went belly up during my leave, I had to transition my MacBook, which was usually my test machine, to be my main machine. So I've been on that for my production machine for a long time, and it's been fine. It's been fine. You know, I think that's your... Maybe that's... Is that how you would boil down your review? It's been fine?
Yeah. I mean, it's... That's about it. It is not disruptive in the way that some past OS releases have been. It feels... You know, how some OS releases, you're like, whoa. Like, oh, boy. This is not my Mac. Like, this is different. I'm going to have to adapt. It's not like that, right? Like, yeah. You open system settings and you're like, whoa, what happened there? But like just day-to-day using regular stuff, it seems not that different. And that could be a condemnation, but it's also kind of a promotion of like, oh, well, at least they're not making me rethink my entire Mac experience if I don't want to this year. That's nice. And then in the details, I feel like there's the stuff that is a work in progress, and then there's the stuff that's pretty good. And I think system settings and Stage Manager are both kind of not all there yet, and I hope they get them there because there's more work that needs to be done. But then on the other hand, Shared Photo Library and Continuity Camera are great. Mm-hmm. Like, they're great. If you want to use your phone as a webcam because the device that you use the Mac you use has a lousy webcam, and you have an iPhone, your current iPhone, or even a former iPhone that is laying in a drawer, as long as it's a 10 or a 10S, and later. Anyway, a relatively recent iPhone that is not being used anymore could also be used in this case, but just use your regular iPhone. That alone is a great feature. If you and a partner have been frustrated by the inability to merge your photo libraries easily, that's reason enough to update all your devices, because Shared Photo Library is very good. So there's good, and then there's like, you know, again, do I think that... And I know you use Spaces, and I want to know what you think about Stage Manager. My Stage Manager feeling is not, I think I have referred to it as a failure, but that what I mean is, for me, without more affordances for kind of ease of use, I decided that it was causing me more overhead than it was saving me time. But I could see it, like, it's on a path, right? But it feels like it's just missing a bunch of stuff. Like, it's missing trackpad gestures and keyboard shortcuts and automation through shortcuts. And, like, it's missing all of these things that push it over into being like, yes, I can take Stage Manager and make it do what I want so that my work is more efficient. And instead, it's sort of like, well, you kind of got to do a lot of that stuff manually. And that's my frustration with it. So not like this couldn't be something, but it's like right now, that's why I went with the incomplete grade, needs more work, teacher says to see me kind of approach with that feature, because that's sort of how I feel about it, is like, call you up to the desk and say, you need to do some more work on this. It's not good enough yet.
Yeah, I have tried it for some time, and I've always struggled a little bit with trying to figure out exactly what makes sense in terms of how I want to do it. It just hasn't been something... I'm kind of with you that the overhead is too high. I like Spaces. I don't find that I spend too much time managing them, which I think is the thing for me. I use them often in a very ad hoc fashion. It's like, I need a space for this. I'm going to make a space right now, and I'm done. And then when I'm done with it, I just close it, and it sucks all my windows back into my, you know, single like space that I'm using. And so adding Stage Manager into the mix there, some of it is superfluous to me. I find a lot of the animation, like, I'm not usually somebody who that bothers, but I do find some of like the zooming in, zooming out, animation just extra in a way I don't need. Like, feels like it slows everything down, and I'm just like, it makes it more of a like, okay, it's like the, you know, zooming stuff into the dock, right? The old Genie feature is like, okay, yeah, I get what you're doing there, but if there were an option to do that that was a little less you know, in your face, I think that would appeal to me. I don't need the shelf constantly hanging there. I really enjoy Mission Control, and like, you know, that's how I navigate a lot of stuff. In terms of finding windows, I actually find that solution pretty great. So having the window, the shelf always there, and I know you can get rid of it if you sort of drag windows over there or whatever, but again, that's just more work than I want
to
spend.
I should just be able to hide it and have it just stay hidden and mouse over to the corner to make it show like you do with the dock, right?
And there are things that I find perplexing. Like, for example, if I want to group two things in a space that are both in the shelf, you feel like I could just grab the little thumbnail and drag it onto the other little thumbnail. And it's like, that doesn't do anything. Like, it's like, well, yeah, that's the thing. Is like, we're adding a new metaphor and we're adding all this new layer, but it doesn't behave in the way that all the traditional stuff does. It'd be fine to add new features because you want that sort of discoverability that I think really works well on the Mac, which is like, okay, I can do this thing here. Therefore, I can sort of logic out that when I want to do something elsewhere, it follows these rules, right? Like, I want to drag something over here that's going to follow these rules. And it doesn't. And that's frustrating to me because it feels like I have to not only learn new stuff, but unlearn stuff that I've been doing for a long time. And that's just too much. That's too much overhead for me.
Also, I haven't written anything about Stitch Manager on iPad OS yet, and I will eventually, but not yet. And I'm giving Federico Vitici the air this week is like fine. I want him to be able to write about it. And I had too many other things on my plate. But I will say one of my big complaints about Stitch Manager globally is there's a bunch of things that like it does on iPad that it doesn't do on the Mac that I also find frustrating. The inconsistency, like on the iPad, you can tell it to not show the whatever it is strip thing on the side.
Yeah.
You can just say, don't show it. That's it. And then it doesn't show it. You can move over there and see it, but it doesn't show it by default. And on the Mac, it's not there. Keyboard shortcuts. There are some keyboard shortcuts on iPad of all places, but not on the Mac. And there are some gestures you can do that make sense on iPad that don't actually do anything on the Mac. So yeah, that's part of my complaint about it too. Anyway, I don't think it's fundamentally a bad idea. I really don't, but it feels like, and somebody, I mentioned it in passing, but I'll just say it again. Shortcuts exist on both platforms. And here is once again, a supposedly banner feature of Apple's operating systems, no shortcut support. Like, I don't think shortcuts is the answer for all of these things, but you know, if I want to be able to write a shortcut that says put this window there in Stage Manager and move this to a new stage and do this and all that, I should be able to do that.
That with spaces, Jason, and they don't. Doesn't do that either.
Right? I mean, and this is yes, and that's the larger point. So that's also a frustration, is that they're not tying in to it's missing some basic features, and it's also missing kind of platform support, and it's frustrating.
Fundamentally, this does feel like the toaster fridge to me that Tim Cook always wanted to avoid, because it's essentially like, oh, we've got this great solution, we're going to deploy it on both iPad and Mac, and it's like, well, it doesn't work great in either of those places. Like, in some ways, by doing one thing and deploying it to two platforms, you kind of ended up with a solution that's not great for either of them. And that is a little annoying, because it feels like, I understand why you thought this was a good idea, that you could develop one thing and it would like, oh, it would translate and you could use like, oh, I go from my iPad to my Mac and I kind of can use the same sort of metaphors. But they're not the same platform. And if you want to make them the same platform, well, that's a different conversation. But bolting on a layer on top of it that's designed to work on both, that wasn't the answer.
Mm-mm. Yeah. It's and that's how I feel about the iPad version of it too, is that it is truly neither fish nor fowl or whatever metaphor you want to use, but it is that same idea, which is, well, it's windowing, but not. Like, it's windowing, but we keep complete control over it. And it's like, well, that's the toaster fridge, right? Yes. Yep. It's like, okay, if with it's off, I have the toaster, and with it on, I want the fridge. But instead, what they do is, if it's off, you've got the toaster, forgive me, you turn it on, and it becomes the toaster fridge. And it's like, no. When I turn it on, I want the power. And they're like, well, no, when you turn it on, you don't get the power, you just get different. And it's like, I don't know. Several places, I don't know what we're doing here. I don't know why you built windows and then you didn't let people move the windows around. Like, I just don't get it. I did blow Stephen Hackett's mind this week by pointing out that on the Mac, if you have a picture-in-picture window and you hold down the command key, you can put it anywhere, arbitrary location, and it just stays there. Otherwise, it snaps at the corner, and on iPad, it just, you can't do this. It always snaps to the corner. But on the Mac, you can like say, hey, I'd like to arbitrarily put it in the middle. And a little to the right, right there, boop, and it goes there. It's like, I'd be okay if the Stage Manager was like, well, I want to move your windows, but if you really don't want to let me move your windows, you can hold down a key or whatever, and they'll like, okay, I'll go for that. But no, there's none of that. So.
Yeah, there's no idea.
Oh well, I think it's a work in progress, and I'm okay with a new feature. I wish it was complete, but I'm okay with it growing and changing over time and adding more affordances for users. Here's the thing: let's see them do it, because that is that remains. My big complaint about a lot of Apple features is that they drop them and they walk away. And these are features that they can't walk away from. If they do, then they are failures, because I think that they're missing. Like, there's just huge things that are missing. And the old way of Apple dropping a feature and walking away will kill these features. So I hope they don't walk away.
Proof's in the pudding. And the pudding will be out sometime next year.
And we are going to warm and then chill the pudding in a toaster fridge. That's what we're going to do. Mm. All right.
That's what it's good for.
We will be back next week with who knows what will happen next week, but we'll figure it out. Thank you for being a listener and a subscriber to Six Colors. We appreciate you. Until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.